Again, thank you for listening. This is 95.9 FM, KGVM, or KGVM.org. I'm Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, with Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist. We are co-hosts. The Montana Psychological Association, the public education committee of it, is the group from which this program originated to discuss matters of mental health. However, mental health overlaps with all areas of health, physical, social, behavioral, in general. Today, Dr. Suzanne is introducing a guest who speaks to an incredibly important area, one who tends to that area that vastly improves our mental health. Dr. Suzanne.
Hello there. Our rehab team, several years ago, was working in a care facility when one of the staff's favorite patients, Sam, received tragic news. His beloved daughter, who visited him daily, was killed in an auto accident. Staff were comforting him to no avail. He seemed as if turned to stone. No expression, not speaking, sitting like a statue on the side of his bed. The nurses called a psychologist, our Dr. Wood here, and he came immediately to the facility. I was down the hall in the rehab room and looked up when our small therapy dog jumped up and ran down the hall to see Arliss. When she got to that patient's room, she jumped right into Sam's lap. He began stroking her soft fur, and it seemed to allow his heart to unlock. He wept and was comforted. He was finally able to grieve. It turns out the Yorkshire Terrier was the psychologist that Sam needed. And today we have with us a kind and dear person who daily helps our pets of all kinds to be within our families in the safest way possible. We'd like to welcome Sadie Reddick from Banfield here in town, which is located in the PetSmart. And Sadie, welcome.
Thank you.
We think that you don't just do medical care for the dogs. You do therapy for all of the people bringing in their dogs.
Yeah, it kind of works out that way, I suppose.
Yeah, we're pretty sure of that. Research even backs that up. And so, Sadie, you've done a wonderful job with our pets. How did you become interested in becoming a veterinarian?
Well, I suppose I grew up with all sorts of animals and always knew whatever profession I ended up in would be animal-based, and then just throughout school, I really enjoyed my medicine classes, and things just kind of clicked, and that's how I got set on this path.
Well, you must have been a very good student, because all of my information says that there are very high levels of educational ability needed to even be accepted into veterinarian school. So you had to really be a good student, we're assuming.
Yeah, it's a long path and it takes a lot of dedication, that's for sure.
So how long is the path? Tell us a little bit about your training and how one becomes a doctor for animals.
Yeah, so it's 4 years of undergraduate education, and then you apply to vet school, and if you get in, it's another 4 years of classroom and clinical education.
Wow.
Then is there an internship or something like that?
So the fourth year of vet school is kind of like an internship where we have rotations, and that's where a lot of our clinical experience comes in. And then in between the years of vet school, a lot of students will do externships where they shadow veterinarians and gain a lot of experience through that.
How do you decide between big animals and little animals?
That is a good question. I have not been able to make that decision. I practice on both. So I think it just depends on your interests and what you feel most comfortable working on. So it just depends on each person.
So then what's the largest animal that you've serviced? I know that I think last week was World Elephant Day. What size animal is your biggest challenge as far as size?
Probably horses and cattle are the largest I've seen. Nothing much more exotic than that.
So I haven't noticed people bringing their horses into Banfield. Do you go from place to place to treat these animals?
Yeah, so I actually have a second job at Sorenson Intermountain Vet Hospital, where I practice large animal medicine.
Yeah. Well, what we understand is there's a great shortage of veterinarians right now, and it's very difficult for those in the field because it puts a lot of extra work and effort on your shoulders. What would you say to young people out there thinking about becoming a veterinarian, Sadie?
I would probably tell them to gain as much experience as they can within the field, either by shadowing vets or working for vets beforehand, to make sure that's what they really want to do, and then just to stay focused through their education and make time for both school and fun so that they don't get overwhelmed or burnt out.
And how long have you been operating as a veterinarian, Sadie?
I have only been out of school since last May, so almost a year.
And how would you assess how it feels to be out there in the workspace?
It feels good as far as, like, I've achieved my goal of becoming a vet, but it definitely has a lot of challenges, and you know, vet school can only prepare you for so much. So there's a lot of on-the-job learning and that sort of thing.
I would think watching the people come and go at Banfield when we bring in our small pets, our two little dogs, that you guys are incredibly busy. And there are just people there all the time, and it must be quite tiring.
Yeah, it does get a bit overwhelming and tiring at times, but thankfully we have great support in our veterinary assistants and technicians and receptionists that help manage the balance of the demand.
Well, as we reflect on the huge need there is, we wonder about how we can keep our veterinarians together. After I read all the statistics the last time we had a veterinarian on, we went and got pizza and took it over to Banfield because we felt like we should do something to help. And I think that people in the audience need to realize that actually, the rate of suicide in the veterinary profession has been pegged as close to twice that of the dental profession and more than twice that of the medical profession and four times the rate in the general population. Mm-hmm. So it becomes very serious when you don't have enough people on your team to meet the needs, and then there's the fact, one lady said, Oh, you're a veterinarian. You get to play with puppies all day. And somehow that's just not the case. You're dealing with life and death situations day and night, aren't you, Sadie?
Yep. There's a lot more to it than playing with puppies, although we do love the days where we get to play with puppies.
But. Oh, good. Yes.
Is there a built-in support system for you guys? Like, I know you have to deal a lot with grieving. I was going to say grieving parents, which is true. I think we see ourselves as parents. We, unfortunately, although it's part of life, had the mother of our two pups here. She was put to sleep a couple of years ago because she was so ill. And you guys helped us and her out because that was the only viable thing to do. And I noticed that you guys have a candle there that can be lit. And I did, for whatever reason, I didn't notice it then, but I did the other day when I was there, that you asked for respect of people who come in to know that that's happening. I guess I know in my work over the years, I kind of compartmentalize things, very serious things that, you know, grief and death and dying and all that. I was able eventually to not to put it somewhere back there that I could deal with it, you know, I guess place and time of my choosing rather than it to get me down all the time. I guess I'm asking, how do you deal with it?
I guess probably in a similar way, compartmentalizing for those sorrowful situations, and knowing that, you know, we're still doing the best we can for the animals, and the owners is also really important. Keeping the right mindset, and then having a support system outside of the hospital is also super important for our own mental health.
Exactly. The American Veterinarians Association has been addressing the suicide prevention needed, and it's pointed out that one group, the Banfield Pet Hospital, which is the largest privately owned veterinary practice in the United States, has about 1,000 clinics inside the PetSmart stores. The company launched a training and awareness program to teach its thousands of employees to recognize warning signs, such as isolating or withdrawing behaviors, depressed, anxious, or agitated moods, giving away possessions, or talking about suicide. It's anonymous, one person reported, so you can feel safe talking about perhaps any mistakes you've made or the things that haunt your dreams. And so, are you familiar with this lifeboat that's been created for employees with your company, Sadie?
Yeah. That was part of the startup for becoming an associate with Banfield. So they have a lot of great resources like that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, possibly just because suicide is not just something that veterinarians might contemplate, but also because many people in the audience, particularly with Montana having the highest suicide rate, believe some myths, some wrong concepts about suicide. So we might just quickly go over some of the facts about suicide. And you're probably familiar with these from your Banfield training, but number one, people think that talking about suicide may give someone that idea. However, that's not the case. It doesn't increase risk. It's the best way when someone is thinking about that to reduce the threat for suicide. So we should always ask a coworker, are you okay? And even if we're really concerned, to ask them specifically about thoughts they might have about suicide. In another myth, people who talk about suicide should not be taken seriously. The myth says, well, suicidal talk is just attention-seeking behavior. The truth about this is that if somebody has actually spoken about it, that's a real clue that they're in trouble. And we should always begin to escalate our help and our concern for that person, not let it go. And another myth is that once somebody has attempted suicide, they won't try again. Actually, the rate of suicide is 40 times higher for those who've attempted once. Most suicides, people think, happen because of one traumatic event. But actually, that's not true. It's usually the building up of events and feelings over a long period of time. And most think that a suicidal person clearly wants to die. But what is true is they just want to avoid life in its present form, and that their current circumstances seem too difficult and impossible to bear. Arliss has one study about people who jumped off a bridge in New York City, and those who survived, every single one of them said as they were falling down, they realized they didn't really want to die. One more myth, suicide is generally carried out without warning. But actually, if you're listening and you're aware, they give many clues. And some people think it's only around Christmas or holidays. Those actually insulate people a little bit. It's following the holidays or any time of the year when there might be this kind of event. So just going over these things that we all need to be aware of, but particularly with the risk in this profession, we need to be thinking about and aware of these. I think there were like 70% of veterinarians who had talked to one of their coworkers in one study about suicide and depression. So anyway, Sadie, we're glad that you have Banfield and their mental health support. And how do you personally deal with the difficulties?
I guess I have a lot of hobbies outside of work that help keep me, I guess, sane from all the stresses at work. And so those are probably my biggest help, as well as my family. And not being isolated is another big thing. So those are what help me the most.
What sort of hobbies do you have? I know we've had psychologists on the program and others, and I usually ask them, what do you do? One local psychologist, of all things, you wouldn't expect it, but she does tap dancing. She has with a group or whatever, and each time we have her on, I ask about that, to the point I think it's irritating her that I ask her. But hers is dancing or tap dancing, and mine used to be exercise, physical exercise makes a big difference to me. It used to be running 5Ks and just general running every day when I could. And then we got into half marathons, which was a little bit more than I anticipated. It might have increased my my stress at times. But Do you do any of the strenuous physical stuff?
Yeah, I love running, especially with my dogs, and cross country skiing as well. Although this year hasn't been the greatest for that. And then horseback riding are probably my favorite.
But your profession is so tiring and demanding. I'm glad that you do that. And when I go into Banfield, I notice it seemed like a very upbeat group. You guys, have a lot of fun. And it seems like that you support each other. And I rarely see any sign that anybody is in a fussy mood. In fact, it's on the other end of it. I would expect you guys to be pushed down by some of the demands sometimes, but you do a good job of supporting each other.
Thank you. Yeah, we try to keep everything pretty upbeat. So.
It looks as if we're going to be some more pizza coming that way, I guess.
And according to Leonardo da Vinci, speaking about pets, the smallest feline is a masterpiece. And Charles de Gaulle, the head of France, said, "The better I get to know men, the more I find myself loving dogs." And W.C. Fields said, "The clever cat eats cheese and breathes down rat holes with bated breath." So I think it's interesting that as a vet, part of your relief and part of your joy in life comes with being with your horses and your dogs. What kind of dogs do you have, Sadie?
I have herding dogs, so Australian Shepherds.
I was wondering, there's been I hear two sides of this story, but about dogs. Now, often, I don't say how often, but you hear about a dog being belligerent, vicious, even hurting people. Mm-hmm. And it always seems to me to follow a certain breed. And I know when I've talked to people who've had those dogs, they want to deny it or say that it's, "Oh no, my dog's not that way." But I'm wondering, why is it that you usually hear of these attacks by certain dogs being in certain breeds? Is it just a genetic thing, or from a vet's point of view, what is it?
Probably in part genetic. So they're raised to be herding dogs, and so if they don't have animals to herd, they might herd people.
I usually hear about pit bulls and dogs like that being more likely to be vicious, if you will. And percentage-wise, I realize they're not a very large percentage, but it's larger than most others.
Yeah, I guess in my experience, pit bulls have been pretty dang friendly.
Yeah.
So I don't have a lot of experience with aggressive pit bulls, but I'm sure it does happen in select cases.
Yeah, I grew up with a Doberman Pinscher. She was given to our family. Her name was Gretchen von Liebenschen, and we called her Mac, but that was the gentlest dog. She was the dearest thing, and so part of it also might be family conditioning and the way they grew up, and it's a shame that some have a bad reputation, because Gretchen was our best friend.
I hear that the dogs that you have, you said, I think, herding dogs, that they're among the most intelligent of the dogs. Is that correct?
They are smart, sometimes too smart for their own good.
Yeah, my mom told me this story from when she first got married, and they lived out in the countryside. And every evening she would have to go gather up all the cows and bring them back into, I guess, to the barn. And it just was laborious and difficult. And one day, she always had her faithful dog friend with her. She just got so tired of that. She said, "Oh, get those cows. And that little dog went out and in 5 or 6 minutes had rounded up every single cow and brought them niftily into the barn. And she'd had no idea that he was born and bred to do that particular thing. It was so funny to hear the story.
That does not surprise me.
She had never trained him that, you know, he just knew.
They have amazing instinct.
What are some of the, as far as size of dogs, the largest dogs in the world? What are some of the, and then what are some of the smallest?
The largest breed that I know of, and I might be wrong on this, is called a Leonberger. I've never seen one.
Leonberger. Mm-hmm.
But probably the largest patient I've seen is either a Doberman or a Newfoundland. And then the smallest is probably a Yorkshire Terrier.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know which breeds are supposed to be the largest or the smallest off the top of my head.
One time I was standing in the lobby of a hotel, and I turned around, and I was literally face to face with a dog who was as tall as I was. And I was very surprised. Very nice dog. Very friendly, but as the dog stood up, its shoulders were probably about a little above my waist, and of course the neck and head was right at level with me. And then I've seen dogs that you could hold in the palm of your hand, just a little tiny toy something. And but anyway, we've always been into dogs. We've had some cats. Do you have you ever had a pet cat?
Yes, we have three, and you know, they're barn cats, but they don't know they are.
You know,
I don't know it.
Just before going on to a more difficult part of the topic, I wanted to point out that Quentin Tarantino, the movie maker, said, "Dogs got personality. Personality goes a long way." And Bill Dana said, "I had been told that the training procedure with cats was difficult. It's not. Mine had me trained in 2 days." So, and Jules Verne said about cats, "I believe cats to be spirits come to earth. A cat, I am sure, could walk on a cloud without falling through." So those are fun. And that brings us to another topic about how costs have risen and how a big concern for many is being able to pay for the costs of taking care of their pet when it needs medical care. Have you run into much difficulty with that aspect, Sadie?
Oh, yes. On a daily basis, that is definitely a big part of the stress of a veterinarian is, you know, I think most of us would love to provide our services at no cost, but that's obviously not feasible. And so kind of combating the quick increase in the cost of living and supplies and all of that with what is feasible for our clients is a big part of our everyday job.
I've noticed that when we first took our pets to Banfield and they provided with the possibility of an insurance plans, I think it had 2 or 3 levels. And even though the top level seemed, oh, you mean you pay that much per month per dog? It has proved to be vastly more feasible and inexpensive than if you would take the dog or otherwise your pet in. Can you explain their insurances?
Yeah, so they're not exactly insurance. They're basically preventative care plans where you can take the cost of all of the preventative care needs of the pet and spread it out over a year's or 12 months of payments. And so it includes, depending on the levels you're talking about, all of their vaccines, possibly a dental cleaning, depending on which one, and then some preventative care diagnostics as well. So that, I think that's really helpful for spreading out the financial cost of owning a pet for our clients.
Yeah, it seems to be when they present you with the summary of care, it shows what it would have cost and how much, you know, your preventive care plan helped. And I think it's turned out that with our dogs, the most expensive plan, which is very less expensive than the actual cost, was the one that we picked. And I'm happy we did. It's made a difference, I think, in people who are concerned about budgeting. But if you don't have that kind of, like Banfield care and a preventive plan, how do you go about, what do you urge people to do?
Basically, you just present our clients with the estimated cost of the care that their pet needs, and then they decide to pay it at that time, or just do the services they most need.
I just feel that this puts such an extra burden on veterinarians who are already stressed. It seems like 25% are leaving the profession every year, 1 in 4. And Emily Volk, a veterinarian in an emergency clinic in New Jersey, said that the costs for seriously ill dogs, it's a very constant stream of trauma. And the stress, I feel, is exponentially amplified by the involvement of owners' personal finances. A lot of time when we're talking about what we need to do for someone's pet, all they're hearing is the incredible cost. You get accused of only being there for the money. A couple of weeks ago, someone called me a thief. And it's so hard on the veterinarian, the moral distress, the idea that I cannot accomplish what my sole purpose should be, which is to care for an animal, because there are barriers to that care, one of the largest of which is financial.
The financial aspect of medicine definitely is a big factor in the decisions we make for our pets, or that the clients make for their pets. And so I guess it's hard to present the plan and the prognosis and the cost of it, and then let the client decide what makes the most sense for them and their pet and their situation. And so there's a lot of stakeholders in the care of a pet. And so all of those need to be taken into consideration: the client, the animal, the veterinarian, and the financial costs are all factors. And so I think that's a large part of the daily stress of a veterinarian, is balancing those and feeling okay with it at the end of the day.
Yes, unfortunately, that aspect is there. We can't thank you enough for going into a field that took you 8+ years to accomplish, and we truly appreciate every one of you. I think all of us pet owners should send a card or a pizza or a cake or cookies to our veterinarians.
I wanted to ask you about your experience with personal help or assist dogs in what I do now in this area of psychology that I've chosen after many other years of a different sort of care, is to do psychological examinations, mental status exams for veterans, primarily, most of whom I'm evaluating for post-traumatic stress disorder. And several of them, I'd say maybe one out of 10 even, has a service dog with them. And I've heard some fantastic narratives of how these dogs have helped these people. And we see movies and we hear about the combat soldiers where dogs on the battlefield have saved lives and done different things. But I found that amazing that this animal is so loyal to his or her owner that they will even lay down their own lives at times for them. Do you do much assistance of those kinds of animals?
Yeah, we have some patients at the clinic that come in that are service animals, and it's pretty amazing what they're able to do for their people. And so I think the intuition of these animals is really amazing in what they can do.
We had a former combat soldier and a former policeman here in the city who had an animal that he had problems that go along with PTSD, trouble in his sleeping cycle. He couldn't get it. He would have nightmares and would really, it was causing even physical damage with the changes in his system due to lack of rest, a sudden burst of adrenaline in sleep, and cortisol changes in his chemistry, causing even heart damage. But this dog was trained to notice that if the former soldier began to show REM sleep or being very agitated in sleep, he would awaken him. He would lick him or bark or do something to actually wake the person up. So, I mean, that specific kind of training, I think, is amazing that the dog would be trained to do such a intricate maneuver as that.
Yeah.
I believe that person has kept that dog and still has him. He may have another one now. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's really amazing what dogs are able to do.
Does Benfield have a program to help train therapy dogs?
Not that I'm aware of. No, not through the hospital.
Do they? What kind of training? I've seen signs or posters there about different kinds of. What kind of training do you all do? Or does that, maybe PetSmart does it. I'm not sure which one of you does it.
Yeah, I think that's through PetSmart. They have puppy training classes, and quite a few of our clients do use those, and I think they're great for the general socialization of young dogs with other pets and people.
Is that like
I'm not super familiar with.
Is it like obedience training, that kind of thing?
I believe so.
Mm-hmm. We have a person that walks in front of our house almost daily, and I see the dog come by, and I'm going, where is the owner? And about a half block away behind him, the fellow's usually on the telephone, but I notice the dog has an antenna, and the owner has some kind of device. What is that? Do you know what that is?
I'm not sure exactly what that is.
I'm not sure if there's a small shock or if there's some kind of vibration reminder to slow down, come back, stop, go. I'm not sure. I guess
yeah, it might be an electrical training collar.
I think that probably is it. It seems to work well. The dog is nice enough. The person is nice. I think technically it probably violates the ordinance about having dogs on leashes. But it seems to work well in their case. And are the dog parks safe here where you can take your animals?
Yeah, I think as long as pets are up to date on their vaccines, then I would think they would be safe. You know, anytime you have a public area with animals, there's always risk of transmission of certain parasites or infection. But overall, I think they are safe and a great spot for dogs and people to mingle.
Which brings us to another question. Last year, it was widely reported in the media that there was an animal virus, a dog virus going around, and it was recommended, for instance, not to take your pets to be groomed, to avoid all gathering places like dog parks until the virus was passed. Could you update us on that, Sadie?
Yeah, as far as I am aware, there's not been a specific pathogen found for these cases. Thankfully, we haven't seen any of those quite as severe as what was described on the media. And so I think we're fortunate in that way. And we're still occasionally see a respiratory case, and thankfully most of them have responded to their treatment appropriately and haven't had severe signs that have lasted a long time. And so there's still a possibility that a pet could contract this unknown respiratory disease, but we have not seen those at our clinic.
That's great that Bozeman is not having a big event with this. That's good to hear.
You notice that we've, at least from our end, talking about dogs and some, a little bit about cats. What other animals do you guys treat?
We mainly at Banfield treat dogs and cats. We'll see an occasional exotic animal, but they're typically the pets at PetSmart. So mostly just dogs and cats.
No monkeys or parrots or...
or snakes or fish?
Nope, not too much. Just if they're living at PetSmart currently.
Is there anyone around who does that?
Yes, I believe All West Vet Hospital has a veterinarian that sees exotics regularly. And then there is a vet that will occasionally see exotics over at Hardaway's.
Bob Hope once said that the trees in Siberia are miles apart, and that is why their dogs are so fast.
From one fireplug or tree to the next, I guess. That just reminds me. So people always wonder, why is it, and with our dogs, and any dog I've ever seen, wants to stop and smell everything?
I think dogs just have an extremely strong sense of smell, and so anytime that their nose detects something, they have to investigate.
And they leave scents, I guess. Is that to say, Kilroy was here, I was here, who are you? I mean, are they transmitting conversations?
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I guess just part of the normal behavior of dogs. I don't know the exact reason for it, but definitely normal behavior for them.
Another aspect that we thought maybe we could ask and hope that it wasn't the case with you, but another aspect of being a veterinarian is that you have to pay for 8 years of education.
Mm-hmm.
And the debt for recent veterinary graduates, on average, according to the Veterans Association, is $179,505. And so the average salary for a veterinarian is $100,000. And one veterinarian said that she had been paying on her debt for several years, but because she had a high interest rate, the debt had only grown. How would you advise young people and families looking at the costs of becoming a veterinarian, Sadie?
I would say definitely apply for as many scholarships as you can find. And then when you choose which schools to go to, the cost of tuition should be high on the list as far as if you have options and which school to go to.
Where are the vet schools around?
The closest one to Montana is Washington State, and they have a program with Montana where you do your first year here in Bozeman and then get in-state tuition over at Washington. So that was the best option for me. Colorado State is probably the next closest one. And Oregon State would probably be the next closest one from there.
Are vet schools like medical schools? I've read about students finding it so sometimes prohibitive to go to school in the United States, go to foreign countries. But the problem there is sometimes the training is not at the same level, high level as it is in the U.S. Are there foreign schools that a student would consider?
Yeah, there's a few different ones. There's, I believe, Ireland is a place that one of my colleagues has been to. And then there are schools down in the Caribbean islands that are an option for vet school as well. I'm not super familiar with all of the international vet schools, but I do know that some students turn to that as an option.
I think I knew of some medical students that went, I think, to Granada for med school. And again, I guess if I were dedicated to really be doing something and couldn't afford it, I would consider an alternative, perhaps. But, the debt, I know we hear a lot about student debt and forgiveness and some politicians being for it and others against it, but I think that is a factor one has to consider, as you said, a tuition level. And do they have out-of-state and in-state, or is it still the same no matter what?
So it's out-of-state unless you're able to get one of the in-state programs, like the WeMove program for Montana.
Mm-hmm. That helps.
It does. It makes a big difference.
Yeah. Well, again, it's an incredible task and daunting, and we appreciate so much that you're there and with us, Sarah. Groucho Marx, that wonderful comedian of old, once said, "Outside of a dog, a book is man's best friend. Inside of a dog, it's too dark to read." And Woodrow Wilson, our president from the past, said, "If a dog will not come to you after having looked you in the face, you should go home and examine your conscience." So we are so taught by our dogs and so supported by our dogs in the research, and our cats and our birds, even our fish. One part of the family has a valiant fish that's been with them for years. And these pets are really, by psychological research, some of the best things life has to offer. And so we thank you for being a caregiver for our mental and emotional health. You do so much more than you realize, Sadie.
Oh, thank you.
I think we had talked earlier about the potential of, you know, on caregivers, no matter whether vets, psychologists, or whatever, there is a high rate of of depression oftentimes. But I'd like to mention that I'm on the board at the Help Center, and anybody in this listening audience having any issue with a crisis of any sort, whether depression or thoughts of suicide or whatever, can call 988. That's recently been a kind of a universal number that's been given, I think, across the nation, whether you be a vet looking for help, or in domestic abuse situations, or thinking of suicide, or just needing someone to talk, you can call 988. And locally, the Help Center has a tremendous staff that is providing that kind of assistance to listen. They have a referral list, can help you get assistance wherever you might need. And
you can also just drop by the Help Center. They have on-site counselors. And so maybe, Sadie, if you have an extra dog and cat around, we need to provide them with some therapy pets.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah. Well, again, we just want to reinforce for everyone out in the listening audience that we need to really support the good and wonderful veterinarians that we have, and that we can't be too kind to them, because they do so much for all of those of us with pets.
Hey, thank you for being on the show today. And any final words you'd like to tell the listening audience?
Not in particular. It's great being on and great chatting with you. Covered a lot of great topics. It's been a great show.
Yeah, I would like you to tell folks where you're located, Sadie, and how they could come to Banfield for services. Many people might know already, but just in case.
Yeah, we're located at North 19th, in that strip there by Target, in the back of PetSmart is where our hospital is located.
Yes, and we have used your services for several years and found it extremely reliable and professional with vets like you. And we thank you for being on, and to tell the listening audience to check that out with your pets and continue to listen to KGVM 95.9 or KGVM.org. I'd like to tell you that you can go to that website, KGVM.org, and after this program is aired on Monday evenings and Thursday mornings, you can find it in the repertoire, the archive of shows there over a long period of time after they're actually aired. So thank you for listening to Help and Happiness, and we will see you next time.